Imagine your hometown getting like a staggering 6 degrees Celsius hotter by the end of the century. Your infrastructure melting, your agriculture completely failing.
Yeah, it's a terrifying thought.
It really is. So to figure out how to stop that, our mission today is to do a deep dive into the Western Cape's Vision 2050 Climate Response Strategy. We're sifting through this along with some supporting research to, you know, extract what is basically a localized survival manual for a warming world.
Right. And I think what makes this roadmap so fascinating is how it anchors that very local survival to a strict global target, which is limiting warming to 1.5 degrees rather than 2 degrees.
Which honestly used to sound like a rounding error to me. I mean, half a degree, who really cares?
Yeah, it sounds tiny on paper.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But looking through our notes, I realized it's actually exactly like your body temperature. Like a 1.5 degree fever makes you miserable, sure, but a 2 degree spike.
Yeah.
Your organs actually start shutting down. It's a complete systemic shock.
Oh, that's a really great way to put it. And, you know, in planetary terms, that half degree difference literally translates to 420 million fewer people exposed to extreme heat waves globally.
Wow, 420 million.
Yeah, it's huge. And it also prevents up to a 10% loss in livestock. So hitting that 1.5 mark is literally the difference between a tough summer and a totally unlivable environment.
And the Western Cape is already feeling the symptoms of that fever, right? We aren't talking about abstract future casting here. This is a massive financial hemorrhage happening today.
Oh, absolutely. The immediate costs are staggering.
I mean, just look at the agricultural drought they suffered from 2015 to 2019. That alone cost the region 14 billion rand.
Right.
And if you add the severe storms and the Nisma fires in 2017, well, that's another 4 to 6 billion just wiped out.
Which completely explains the sheer aggression of their 2050 net zero plan. Because when you break down the region's greenhouse gas footprint, a massive 88% of it comes directly from energy.
Wow, 88% just from energy.
Exactly. And historically, South Africa's grid has been, you know, heavily dependent on coal. So reaching net zero isn't about just asking people to recycle a bit more.
Right. It's much bigger than that.
It requires a total structural rip and replace of their energy systems. They have to pivot incredibly hard into renewables and electric mobility.
But cutting emissions is really only half the survival manual, isn't it? Because the climate is already changing. And this actually brings me to a term I saw all over this strategy.
Ecological infrastructure.
Yes, ecological infrastructure. I have to push back a little on this because is this just a bureaucrat's way of saying a forest? I mean, why not just call it a wetland and be done with it?
You know, I thought the exact same thing at first. It sounds like totally unnecessary jargon. But it's actually a profound shift in how a government does its accounting.
Really? How so?
Well, if you just call it a wetland, it's often treated as just empty space. But by labeling it ecological infrastructure, governments are forced to treat natural ecosystems like healthy soils or river catchments as measurable life support systems.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, you literally put them on the balance sheet right alongside your roads and power plants.
Okay, so instead of just budgeting for like concrete seawalls or storm drains, you budget for maintaining a mangrove forest because it physically absorbs storm surges.
Precisely.
And if the mangrove dies, your incredibly expensive coastal highway just washes away anyway.
Exactly. The natural assets do the heavy lifting for the man-made ones.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. But even if you perfectly integrate your power grid and your wetlands, a climate shock still acts as a massive threat multiplier for inequality, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Because you can't just build a solar farm and assume the whole community is saved.
No, and this is the core of what the document calls the just transition. Because when you look at the raw data on disasters, a really staggering reality emerges.
Yeah, I remember reading this part.
Right. Women are 14 times more likely to die in a disaster than men.
14 times. I literally had to reread that number twice. It's unbelievable.
It is chilling. And the mechanics behind it are deeply rooted in social structure. Marginalized women are often the primary caregivers, which means they stay behind in flood or fire zones to care for children or the elderly.
That's heartbreaking.
It really is. Plus, they're frequently excluded from early warning systems or disaster planning altogether. So if your climate strategy doesn't actively design around those blind spots, a greener grid just leaves the most vulnerable behind.
It really hammers home that climate resilience is incredibly local. And taking action isn't just about, you know, battening down the hatches for survival.
Right. There's a huge economic upside, too.
Exactly. The document notes that aggressively investing in this transition early on could leave the Western Cape economy 33% better off by 2040. especially compared to just sitting back and taking the hits.
It's exactly like weatherproofing your house before hurricane season. You know, you pay up front for the storm windows, but you save yourself the massive cost of rebuilding the entire foundation later.
That is a perfect way to look at it. Which brings us to our final thought for you today. About 90% of all global disasters are now climate related.
A terrifying statistic.
Truly. So take a look at your window at your own city. If a sudden shock hit tomorrow, how resilient is your community's ecological infrastructure to protect its most vulnerable residents? Would your city's survival manual be enough to break the fever?